Want to talk to you more about the application of definition now to processing. We discover that a postulate can be divided into many categories. There are postulates which could be conclusions and postulates which could be commands and so forth. But in essence, a postulate, if we consider that a prime purpose of existence is to cause an effect, a postulate which is a command postulate commanding an effect to take place would be the most used or most commonly experienced postulate. Therefore, we get into orders as the most aberrated line. As in interpersonal relationships, it is the delivery and receipt of orders and commands which are themselves the most aberrated thing. We saw this in Dianetics, for instance. A phrase could turn up in a bank and it existed, but because it existed with force, it became an order. So there is a case where a facsimile is able to order the preclear. And we get the command line of postulates. Now, the whole manifestation of interpersonal relations is an interweave of orders and commands, whether politely given or understood or simply agreed upon. For instance, any group of people considers itself to be monitored by some sort of a code of politeness at least, some code of manners. Their activities are so-and-so. Well, actually, this could be considered to be a combination of orders which result in a uniformity of conduct. Now, everybody then has evidently agreed to a certain set of orders. Now, we could say, where do they come from? Well, they don't come from any place. A fellow's packing them right along. As far as the postulate is concerned, he has to remake the postulate all the time, or set it up automatically so the postulate will continue to be made for him. And so we get manners, we get customs, and so forth, as derived from command postulates. Now, where an individual can locate an order source, he is fairly happy about it. You will find in experience that organizations which have very thoroughly understood source points are generally very happy organizations. Not necessarily happy, you know what I mean. Cheerful, or they run, or something of the sort. But it's an oddity that when we've gotten into the military and so forth, in orders and commands, that an individual who talks lightly and politely and so forth, and rather apologetically for passing along orders, isn't discerned to be the source of the order. Then we get a confusion, we get sloppiness, so on. We take a ship that's being run by such a captain, and we find out it starts to go to pieces, and goes to pieces, merely because they can't find out what the order source is. He is not willing to accept the responsibility of being the order source, this captain, and the crew doesn't recognize him as being an order source. Now we come up against this fantastic thing which really seems to violate our every sensibility, and that is a first sergeant or a captain or something like that who is rough, tough, loud, emphatic, and we get a company or a squad or a ship or a barracks or something which is clean, which is orderly, which does run on routine, and we get at the same time, and I made a study of this, a lower incidence of neurosis and psychosis in the organization. The ships in the amphibious forces were those in the last war which were most severely handled in terms of the amount of activity per time unit. Very slight, you see. Great deal of time at sea. Thousands and thousands of men stuck on ships. No shore leave, nothing of this sort. An inglorious sort of an activity. The service was not super praised or cared for like the air service or the submarine service or any of these branches. And the incidence of neurosis and psychosis on ships of the amphibious forces was very, very high, extremely high. A ship of 550 complement incidence of psychosis 2 per month. Oh boy, this is real high in any body of men. But on what ships was it 2 per month? It was on ships where the order source was tremendously indefinite and the chain of command was sloppily followed, to such a degree that nobody quite knew which way the orders were going to come from next. And it was on these ships that you had a higher incidence of neurosis and psychosis than on ships where those in command seemed to be very, very sourceful. Not resourceful, just sourceful. And these individuals would keep things in line, keep them running. You could easily discern where the orders were coming from, and therefore you knew what you were the effect of. But where you wouldn't know where the orders were coming from, you wouldn't know what you were being the effect of. Now, let's take an engram bank. Here are tremendous quantities of hidden orders, orders and commands, lots of them. Coming from where? From what source? Who from? What? Why? And yet they appear, and an individual is so in apathy about them that he no longer even vaguely recognizes their source. And we get the formation of such a thing as the quote, unconscious mind, which, by the way, doesn't exist, but it's a word or a phrase which embraced a certain set of phenomena. We get this activity of hidden orders being obeyed instinctively and unquestioningly, but fearfully. Now, sometimes the order's there, sometimes it's not there. The environment re-stimulates the engram gives the order. Well, did the environment order it? No, there's nothing dangerous in the environment, and yet the fellow is very afraid. Why is he afraid? Well, he isn't afraid from any source that he can spot. He doesn't feel grief because of something in the environment, yet this environment makes him afraid, or it makes him full of grief, or it makes him apathetic, and he has no, quote, explanation for this phenomena. And as a consequence, he becomes confused, and as his confusion deepens, of course, the orders in the engram bank become more and more effective upon him. This is unknown order source, which would say an unlocated C on a communication line. He's on a communication line, but he can't locate the C, so he at E doesn't get located. So where is he is the immediate result of this. Where is he? If you can't locate the C, then you better not be able to locate the E, believe me. Because part of the communication from C, if it's a hidden influence and C is unlocated, part of the communication is don't be located. See, the integral part of the communication. So the fellow is not at E. You ask him to take a look at something. He takes a look. How can he see anything? He doesn't know where he is to receive the return wave. So if he isn't there to receive the return wave, of course he can't see. He is unable to perceive. And we get this condition of an individual lost, indecisive, and easily affected by any hidden influence which springs up. This is because he can't locate his order sources. Well, one of his solutions to this is to become the sole order source. You know, I will be now the sole order source for anything and everything. And if they won't do it, I will, as his E's collapse into the C's. Why, of course, he gets to a point where only he can move the boxes around in the storeroom, even though he's the manager. And only he can do the selling, although he has a whole sales department and so forth. This is a symptom of collapsed communication lines. And he solves it then by obsessively or compulsively outflowing only. He doesn't dare inflow. If he inflowed, he'd get this horrible mass of indistinguishable orders which would disorient him. He wouldn't know where he was or what he was doing. His answer to this, of course, is to outflow as long as possible. Well, of course, he outflows just so long, and he gets on a stuck flow, and he's not sure where those E points are, so he's not sure where E is outflowing from, and we have another picnic on our hands. So this fellow, from being well-balanced and able to be at the source point of communications and emanate communications, be at the effect point of communications, and be able to receive communications, finds himself dislocated to such a degree that he can neither order nor receive orders. First symptom we discover in auditing of this is those cases which are going to take a long time to recover. First symptom is that they will slightly vary an auditing command in their execution of it. You've said, give me three places where you were not, and they tell you two. You say, now give me three places where the condition doesn't exist, and they say, well, it doesn't exist anywhere. These are all mechanical manifestations. You see, they're just giving a slight curve on this line. Or they're talking so hard about their own case that they can't receive an order, which is the compulsive line. We see where all these things are and what they're directed to. You have an intolerance for the dispatch and receipt of orders, which I say is just that type of postulate, which is a command postulate. And they have an intolerance for this command postulate because there's too many hidden ones and they can't tell where they're coming from. And if they start receiving one, they're liable to receive thousands, and there's no telling what's going to happen here. Well, this is the first problem of the auditor. If he has a case that is hanging fire, you can be assured that that case is not following his orders. I mean, just automatically. I'm sorry if this is so, but it's so. I mean, case taking a long time to roll, he's just not following the auditing orders. That isn't that the techniques are so hot that they are completely unbeatable, but it does mean that experience over a great many cases and with a great many auditors has demonstrated this consistently. Let's take a group. You're auditing a group. There are 20 people in this group. You can fully expect that 5 people in that group are not only not doing your orders, they are doing something else. 3 or 4 more in that 20 will be just varying your command slightly. Not just so it won't work, but they're just varying it slightly. And, of course, in view of the fact they don't know anything about Scientology, their variation of it might be very peculiar indeed. And so we run a group of 20, which we pull in off the street, and we find out that 12 of them get into very fine, beautiful condition, and the other 8 simply hang fire, chug. What happened? Here we have the problem of orders. The first condition of auditing is that orders must be given and received. Well, unfortunately, this is the highest level of aberration, so you certainly better start in a comprehensible way on this problem as a first and foremost problem. It is a problem, actually, which has nothing to do with space. The problem itself develops space. It is a problem which is above space as a problem. In the execution of the problem, we get space. Communication gets a distance in it. And this condition might exist without space, and when we put it into execution, space develops. So we don't care one way or the other how we handle this in terms of space. Let's just handle it in terms of command postulates and improve the ability of the pre-clear to receive and give commands. Now, the best way to do this that we know of for auditors in general is opening procedure SOP-8C. The second best way to do this is opening procedure SOP-8D. The reason that's the second best way is because you can't quite check on whether or not this individual is actually remedying heaviness. So we come back to the fact that SOP-8C, with an occasional spotting of space, is very, very efficacious in this. A case will become frantic under this, which would break under just, let's both sit down here, and I'll give commands and you follow them. A case which would break under that, or run into situations he couldn't handle, or get into peculiar states of mind developed by his inability to handle a command and running something else entirely different, which the auditor would find impossible to handle. Why would the auditor find this all but impossible to handle? Well, it's because the fellow's out of communication anyway. Now you put him more out of communication because you keep giving him commands and he runs them some other way. He goes further out of communication. Now something desperate happens in his case and you think you're going to remedy it. Well, you're not going to remedy it because you didn't remedy anything with the case while he was in communication. Now he's gone out and you're certainly not going to remedy it now. So let's just take a very definite precaution and at the same time advance any case we lay our hands on by running a opening procedure SOP-8C and establishing with the pre-clear, one, a two-way communication, and two, an ability to follow orders. Just that and no more. We don't care how long it takes or anything like it. We'll find several manifestations we'll find the worst of the manifestation is the fellow will just downright refuse to do any command. We'll dramatize. Up to this time, he's been very, very reasonable. He's been a very rational fellow. And you give him a couple of words. You say, go over and put your finger on the middle of the table. And the next thing you know, you have somebody dramatizing. He's dramatizing like mad. Well, what's this all about? It's just the fact that he finds himself pinpointed. He is locating himself at the effect point, and you are putting him right at the effect point, and that's one place he mustn't be. People at the effect points get shot. They're given hidden influences. They are used, abused. They are mauled and maimed. And everybody knows what happens to people at effect points. They're knocked completely out of this universe, naturally. You just simply did that, and he blew up. That's the worst manifestation. But one, the apathy manifestation, whereby the fellow goes into an hypnotic trance and simply goes around and obeys your orders in hypnotic trance. That actually is a little worse than the other one. The other one is worst for you, mostly because it will get you darned upset. But the hardest one to solve is the apathy manifestation. The fellow is in a sort of a trance, and he goes around, he does all these things. And where he breaks down is giving himself the order to do it. And he cracks right at that point. He was all right, you know, as long as you said, go over and put your finger in the middle of the table. Now, take your finger off the middle of the table, find a spot in the wall, and put your finger on that. This is a little more self-determinism. Find a spot on the wall. You see him get a little tense about there, but he'd do it. And then you say, all right, now find another spot and decide when to touch it. You can just see the apathy start to chip apart and the wheels creak. Now, you could expect this person to go up into the dramatizing manifestation in many cases. Not always, but you could be perfectly willing to see this happen and push it right on through. Because he's just coming up tone scale. He got up to a point where he was unhypnotized, at least for the purposes of opening procedure. All right. Therefore, just as is given in HC, wherein you tell somebody to move about and locate and touch various objects, and then to select various objects to touch, and then to decide when he is going to touch what objects. And you can also get him to change his mind after he selected an object, and so key out automatic selector devices. And you get, in this respect, a continuing betterment of your communication with the preclear. Never sit down and run thought processes on somebody who is even vaguely unable, incapable, doubtful, or unreal in opening procedure. When you've got them all nailed with opening procedure, got them all smoothed out with opening procedure, you can open up with any process you like, and it will work quite rapidly. But up to that time, there was no sense in giving him an order because he couldn't receive one. Now, opening procedure consists of moving the body around. The body. Several reasons for this. This is the hardest thing he is trying to control. And one of the biggest things he could learn is that he is controlling his body. And if he is controlling his body, why then and there, he will make an enormous advance. Because, in essence, what he would love to do and have as a result of auditing is a security that a communication line actually exists between himself and his body. He can be the effect of the body or cause of action of the body. Both ways, we're trying to string a straight communication line for the thetan to the body. In other words, we have a problem here where the thetan is not sure whether the body directs him or he directs the body. Anytime we have a problem where opening procedures found even vaguely difficult or varied by the preclear. So therefore, we use the body, and we move the body around in this fashion. Next thing that we discover is very efficacious about this is that it has a tendency to orient the preclear on what he can expect from you. I say has a tendency to, it will. He finds out he isn't going to get shot merely because he went over and put his finger on the desk. You're not going to blow up or throw a table at him. Or the walls aren't going to fall in on him because he followed an order. Now, he'll get the idea that he is being all effect in opening procedure. After a while, you get over this idea. He's not being all effect. He happens to be at one moment on the effect point of the communication line, but when he makes a postulate to do something, he's at a C point on a new communication line, isn't he? And he'll learn this. Actually, I wouldn't abandon opening procedure until he had learned that particular point. This has been found to cut 10, 12 hours off of a professional auditing job. You just do it for a while. How long can you do it? Oh, man. I don't know how long you could do opening procedure. But I can tell you that I've really never seen it done with no benefit. I mean, I've never seen it carried forward to a point where it was no longer beneficial. Because it goes into the next bracket we're interested in about communications, goes into duplication. You tell this fellow to walk over and put his hand on top of the garbage can, okay? Well, I'll walk over and put your hand on that tree. Now select a point on the garbage can lid, put your hand on it. Now select a point on the tree and put your hand on that. Now select a point on the garbage can lid, put your hand on that. Now select a point on... What are you running into there? Duplication, unwillingness to duplicate. So opening procedure in full sweep takes that one out. You're liable to find somebody get frantic. This person was the most obedient pre-clear you ever saw, and they did it so well, and they tried so hard, and they were so satisfactory, and yet you asked them rather monotonously to do this, to do that, to do this, to do that, to do this, to do that. Tense, 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 tense. Frantic, dramatize. See? I won't touch that garbage can lid. You can't make me touch that garbage can lid. I never want to see another garbage can lid. I'm just bored still. They're bored, all right. A person who is screaming is always bored. And the answer for that is that you are actually running out boredom. Boredom, of course, is a manifestation brought about by the existence of barriers. When a person has too many barriers interposed between himself and his goals, he can be said to be bored. His first manifestation, after his recognition that barriers will arise to prevent him from accomplishing his goals, to arrive at ease or finish points, is boredom. Now, an individual who can't arrive or who can't part, of course, has all these things in common, but also has this one. He knows he will be stopped by a barrier before he is permitted to arrive. He knows that, if he knows anything else. He knows that if he had an ambition to paint, the sooner or later he would meet somebody that would take that ambition out of him. So why try? He knows that if he started out to do something, he'd never be able to finish it anyway. So why start it? One manifestation of it a little higher on the tone scale is there probably isn't enough time to finish it. So why start it? Really, we shouldn't start anything that we can't finish, and therefore, we really don't have enough time. That's just an alibi. The same manifestation's taking place here. We get, then, a belief and a conviction that an individual is going to be stopped before he is able to attain any finish point in the cycle of action. If he's going to attain that, he won't be bored. He'll just go ahead and attain it. But if he's going to be bored, why, this is the emotion, which is just the warning emotion, which runs up to, you'll get frantic if you go any further toward that goal. It's just a warner. You know, it's a person that's going to go just so far, and he starts to slide into this emotion. And the emotion which we call boredom is a precursor of a much more savage emotion called franticness. Screaming franticness comes right after boredom if you start to run boredom out. Because you're pushing somebody who was bored, if you push them at all, straight at some barrier. And when I say barrier, I mean actually barrier. A wall. You're making them run straight into a wall. You're making them run straight into a licking. You're making them run straight into the necessity of crossing endless space which never has any finish point. That's a barrier too, you know, distance. In fact, the chief barrier there is distance. If you wanted a real good prison, you wouldn't build it out of walls, you'd build it out of distance. You just make the distance infinity in all directions, and you'd have a fine prison. In view of the fact it's impossible to have an infinity in all directions, no such prison is possible. But this universe does a very good job of pretending to be one. Then they talk about an expanding universe. Nothing which is an infinity in diameter could possibly ever expand. Now, here we have, then, a very handy method of running up to and out some existing engram, incident, or barrier which is interposing between the preclear and his attainment of goals. Franticness. He starts to duplicate something. He duplicates it again. He starts to get bored. And he does it again, and now he's more bored. And he does it again, and by this time, he's starting to feel pain someplace or another. Pain will flick on, and it will flip him into an emotional response. His emotional response, then, will take place, which gives every manifestation of somebody who's trying to safeguard himself against being hurt. And then he will come closer to it and closer to it, and you actually just run it right on out. Well, what if this person practically spun in this process? You would have understood immediately that you started to audit such a person, this person was liable to spin, and that you would have to take it very easy with this person. So we would combine opening procedure with contact, step 7, SOP 8. How would we combine that? See, opening procedure is a modus operandi. It's how you do something in present time, and you can do anything, or if you figured for a little while, you could figure out how to run any postulate or combination or anything of the sort by opening procedure. You'd have to think it over for a little while to get some of them, but you'd be able to do it, put it into action form. You would say to him, locate something in the yard which is real to you. Now walk over and touch it. Okay, locate something else which is real to you. Now walk over and touch that. Locate something else which is real to you. You'll find his reality is picking up at the same time he's just following orders. If you told somebody, go over there and touch the wall, and he goes over and he touches the wall, and for an instant he can't get his finger off the wall or some such thing, watch out. Or if he pulls his finger off the wall and his hand shakes for a moment or two. Some peculiar manifestation as a result of just having him follow this simple command, watch out, because you're liable to run a duplication of some action several times, just as an integral part of opening procedure, and find that your preclear practically blows his brains out as a result. He's being moved into more pain than he can tolerate. Well, a good auditor handling this would actually remedy the fellow's havingness, or he would do something to do this. Now, one of the processes by which this can be done when a person starts to go into franticness, one of the things which remedies it is having the preclear make his body flip-flop. This is a mock-up. Tell the preclear, now, get an idea of your body out there in front of you, flip-flopping and completely out of control, and then falling down dead and wasting away to nothing. Now, do that again. Now, have your body out there, out of control, flip-flopping, you unable to control it, and then have it fall away to nothing, and then ask him to do it again. And this franticness, which he has found creeping in on him, would vanish. Remedying his havingness at this time would actually remedy that franticness. Or having him flip-flop his body a few times would remedy that havingness. So there isn't any real reason why you have to torture him. But if you just went through with opening procedure and the manifestation wasn't too heavy, you'd just go right on through. Now, what are those two things? Flip-flopping and remedying of havingness will fix up not just boredom, but any nervousness or franticness that comes about. And there are many, many processes that stem from this, but when the preclear looks like he's just before he's about to fly out of control, you put him back under control again. That's a keynote of any such process. Now, I hope you know how to run opening procedure.